Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast. With me, Russell Guyver. And with him over there.
Oh, man.
Peter Marsh. Isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, in case you forgot.
It is you. Yes. Oh, well, yeah, no, how could I forget? On this podcast about the, well, it's basically the beautiful podcast about the beautiful team within the beautiful game, isn't it, Peter? Something along those lines.
What, Man City?
Yeah, well, you know, there was two beautiful teams. Let's put it that way, shall we? Yes, we've just come off the back of a 4-1 defeat. I'm not going to say mauling because I think the four was a little flattering, but a heavy defeat, shall we say.
Christy, I would say the other way around it, and somewhat in the first half. But yeah, we can come on to that. I thought three goals, but they were well worth three goal difference, to be honest, even with the way we played second half.
Okay, fair enough. A little bit of a difference of opinion on that one. However, the way the first half was going, I thought it was going to be an all-out mauling.
Yeah, I had visions of a Southampton's equivalent from the last couple of seasons. That was...
Yeah.
I don't know... It's interesting. I mean, when we get into more detail, we can discuss like the tactics and that sort of thing. But I think Potter got it pretty wrong on Saturday in the first half, as he has done actually quite a few games this season. Burnley away comes to mind. You know, it's that my dad and I were talking at the weekend. It's interesting. We've changed for the last couple of years. We generally played quite well in the first half, and then the other teams changed it in the second half, and we couldn't react. This year, we've actually had to change things quite a lot at half time and not done too well. Burnley, Palace. And City are all kind of examples of that, and then got away with it until City. Obviously, I mean, Burnley, we could have been two or three down. Palace, we could have, if they'd really had a bit more cutting edge, been more down. But then, obviously, we should have got in 0-0 actually, arguably. You know, and then we've got away with it, and then come out better second half. But in this occasion, the damage was done because Man City have some decent players.
Yeah, it's a 4-1 defeat in the end, as we said, for the away side. It's the, four games in a row where we haven't won. We've had three draws now, defeat. This one probably the least surprising of all results, I would imagine, overall. The goals coming from Gundogan, a brace from Foden, and then a final goal after we'd pulled one back through McAllister's penalty from Mahrez. Assists for them, Bernardo Silva, Grealish, Gabriel Jesus, and Foden as well, who himself had a chance at a hat-trick. But anyway, he set up that last one. So, I mean, yeah, just getting into the details of the game then, Peter. I mean, first of all, in terms of the lineup, were there any surprises in there? We didn't have Bissouma again, although he was, again, sort of one of the possibles. We started with Sanchez in goal. We had Veltman, Duncan, Byrne as the general centre-back three. March going on to the right side this time. Correa still in at the left. And then we have that midfield of Grosch, Lallana and Modo again, with Trossard and Morpé further forward.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
So I've got, it wasn't really quite so much the starting 11, more the tactics that I would question, how far at the pitch we played and that sort of thing. But I do wonder why, what's going on. And I know I've seen various explanations people put together of wanting to keep Bissouma involved. But to me, if he's available and he's available to play on the bench, he should be starting. And if his mind's not right, he shouldn't be on the bench. It seems if his mind or he's still injured or whatever, he shouldn't be on the bench. And if it's and if he's is available and is ready to play, he should start because we've missed him so much these last four games.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with you a bit on that one because I do think if it really depends on what exactly is going on. But if Bissouma is, should we say, his mind's not quite right on it, but the manager, well, the coach, I should say, Graham Potter, deems that it would be in his best interest, either from a mental health point of view or a general motivational point of view, either for him or for the other players, to have him in there. Given that we do get quite a long list of subs that we're allowed to use now, I personally think I would keep him involved if that is seen as the best bet. I mean, he obviously knows the player personally and we don't, so it's hard for us to say. But if that would genuinely benefit him, in Graham Potter's opinion, then I think I would do. I would have him on the bench regardless. It is frustrating, though, isn't it, as a fan? You're watching him, he's on the bench. You can see when we need a player like him on the pitch and he's not coming on. Whether it's something to do with what we've discussed before, whether it's still lingering niggles to do with the injury or whether it's, as you said, just something else. I mean, he might just even be under the weather. Who knows what? But I could see the point of not having him on there if he's not, if there's no intention to play him. The other thing is, was there no intention or was there certain circumstances when he'd be brought on? I can't imagine that is the case, to be honest, because
no, I mean, surely
there were circumstances, weren't there?
Yeah, because he was cutting through us at every possible offence, whatever, would be those circumstances.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that was the case. Yeah.
Based on form, I wouldn't have played Grosch. I don't think he's done enough from open play recently to justify being in the first team. And I don't think his set pieces have been as good recently as well. So I don't think he adds anything. I'd have played McAllister over him. Or even Duffy had an extra defender in there against City. That would have been maybe pay March further forward, which is what they did in the second half. But that would have, I certainly wouldn't have started Grosch. And Burn against City as well did worry me. And obviously it was then taken off at 55, 60 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
To me, the real problem was we basically stood on the halfway line one-on-one against their attackers when their pace is so much greater than ours, and I didn't understand it. I don't get the logic of it. We played further up the field, it looked to me, like we did against Norwich, and Norwich had no pace. So, I just found that whole thing. And Norwich tried to get in behind us even then, and did, but then weren't quick enough to get through. Why didn't we learn from that? I mean, City were just taking us apart because we insisted on going one-on-one against their attacking for the front three, who were clearly one of the best front threes. I actually think if City could have design tactics where they want to play against, our first half tactics would be exactly that. They literally couldn't have played into their hands anymore. Try and play them at their own game, obviously not going to be as good. Try and playing the ball through, trying to play it tight, don't not kind of like get balls up quickly too much, and also play high up the pitch so they can get in behind. It was illogical. I don't understand what Potter was doing, to be honest. Yeah, I can't believe that would have been something he wouldn't have done as well. It seems odd that if they were doing that all the time and he wasn't wanting them to, he'd have told them.
Yeah, I feared for the worst, I must admit. You know, the goals, if anyone doesn't know, Gundogan's goal was on 13 minutes. Foden got his two on 28 and 31. So by just after the half-hour mark, you know, you're 3-0 down, completely dominated in the match. And what they were doing, they were just so clinical, so quick, in terms of not just the speed of passing, but the speed of movement, the speed of thought, and literally the speed when they're just making runs, counters, whatever it was. They just seemed, the transitions just seemed to be so so fluid and so kind of just at ease. Yeah. You know, it all just seemed to be so easy.
I'd say all three goals had an element of fortune about them in the end. I mean, there's a deflection on, obviously, for a shot, and I mean, Sanchez, I think Sanchez comes under probably one of those that probably would have been given last year. I think the guy did interfere with him a bit and, you know, kind of when he was trying to catch the ball, but probably not enough under these rules these days. I think there was some contact there, which normally, obviously, in the old days was always anyone breathes near a goalkeeper, then it's a foul. The second one, I think Foden kind of kicked into the ground, but then it kind of went into the top corner, could have gone almost anywhere, and the third one took a deflection. So, ironically, for all their slick play, all three of their goals had a little bit of an element of fortune. But I mean, I thought they were probably four or five goals better than us in the first half overall. We were all over the place. I mean, Duncan already cleared off the line brilliantly by the time they scored, and we just kept giving it away. I mean, I found it very odd that they gave the man the match to Duncan at the game, because to me, he was giving the ball away quite a lot in the first half, especially.
Yeah, I mean,
second goal.
He gave the ball away at second goal, wasn't it? Yeah, because Cucurella, I think, had gone on the attack in one of the moves, hadn't he? And it was given away in the penalty area, and then they went all the way up the other end. But I think that was the third goal, I think it was. The second goal was, Dunk gave it away in a deeper position, and that led to that goal.
And he did two or three more times as well. I thought he looked quite shaky, to be honest, considering.
I mean, obviously,
they got man of the match.
And what they've done, of course, before the first goal, there was a magnificent clearance off the line, it has to be said, which was Lewis Dunk. So obviously that would have played into people's mindsets, I suppose, when they're looking to clutch at straws as to who could be a man of the match in a 4-1 defeat.
And I guess, ironically, I thought there were some candidates. I thought March and Cucurella both had good games. Yeah. I thought that Sanchez actually, whether or not you're ignoring the first goal and one rather crazy kick, it would have been worse. But for him, actually, on a few occasions, he actually had a pretty good game. Dunk and Grosch struggled, I thought.
McAllister did all right. I think Modder did okay, I thought.
All three subs did well, actually. Lamptey, Wepu and McAllister all came on and did pretty well.
Yes, I was going to get on to those, the other guys, in a minute. Yeah, they certainly did. I mean, we were the better side when they were on the pitch, definitely. And I know we were chasing the game by then, and there might be an argument to say City had taken their foot off the pedal a bit, perhaps, knowing that they had so much of an advantage score-wise. But nonetheless, we did go at them. And I do think, Pep Guardiola said in his post-match interview something along the lines of, we knew that we went in at 3-0 at half-time. And against some teams, that would mean game over and we've just got to see it out and manage the game. But against Brighton, he knew that it wouldn't just be a case of that they were going to come at us. His words, and it wouldn't be as easy as that. He's obviously valuing our quality. He does rate us as a team, doesn't he? And he rates Graham Potter as a manager. I mean, some people have accused him of being a bit patronising with some of his tones. Whether that is the case or not, I don't know. But I know he does definitely rate us. And he said that to the players at half-time and, be ready for an onslaught. And we did pretty much dominate the second half when all said and done, apart from the last 5 to 10 minutes, wasn't it?
Which included the last 5 minutes or so, we'd be very glad we didn't score until the 81st minute because it kind of woke City up, didn't it, really? Rather than giving us a chance to push back, they basically barely gave us a ball after that.
Because, that's right, because there was exactly 50 minutes between Foden's second goal, which made it 3-0, and McAllister converting the penalty, which made it 3-1, which came from one of those subs you mentioned, and Wepu, who I thought, as you said, had a good impact on the game. Looked a lot less at sea, didn't he, against this world-class team than he did when he came on in a previous match recently.
Well, I think, crucially, further forward as Leicester? Well. Leicester came on and Burnley started and struggled. Although, to be fair, in that first half, everyone struggled and he was the one sacrificed at half-time.
But ironically, he played better in this one, didn't he? And he won the penalty.
Yeah. I think the key was he played further forward, which is where he plays.
Yep.
We do seem to be collecting an awful lot of attacking midfielders. Mm. We don't actually really, because I rather thought Moda would be the replacement for Bissouma when he was out, but actually he's happier further forward. So we don't really have a replacement for Bissouma.
Yeah, we've been playing Lallana deeper and that hasn't really worked. Caicedo's on loan. As you said, Mwepa likes to get further forward. And I guess Caicedo is probably the future custodian, unless any of our existing youth players come through as well.
I don't know if someone like Weir or Jenks can play further back.
Weir and Jenks can definitely both play there. And the other possible option is what happened to Tudor Baluta? Actually, Raymond, the gent I spoke to on the phone today, and he was he mentioned him, and I have to admit I'd kind of forgotten about him, sort of. And he is a conventional central defensive midfielder, so. But he's probably a long way away from the squad, I would guess. He's got an injury at the moment.
That's right.
But I would imagine, there's a possible case for one of the youth guys coming in, as you said, Jenks or somebody like that. Or even Hayden Roberts could play slightly further forward than his other position and go into a central defensive midfield role as well. Yeah. Good to see the cat actions back, Peter, just strolling into view on the far side there. Who have you got there?
He's obviously a big Newcastle fan, being black and white.
Is that Sydney?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get on to talking about Sydney's team later on. I'm sure there's time for more ranting on that subject. And also a certain banner that appeared. Controversial, but not in the way that the Ipswich Town banner was when it turned up at the Amex.
I'm not sure that was controversial, more just like moronic, I think, probably.
That might be a fairer assessment. But getting back on track on this game then. So, the 4-1, we've mentioned the scorers. The goals individually, as you said, we'd had that brilliant clearance off the line from Dunk. We had the second one, which at the time I was fuming about because, the first goal rather, because I thought it was that the one with the foul on Sanchez? It was.
Yeah, the first, it looked like that could be a foul on Sanchez, and it also looked like it could be offside apparently as well.
Yeah.
I thought
I thought it was offside. In fact, I was spitting feathers about it. And there isn't a definitive angle showed on the highlights that I've seen. I did record the full live thing, but I haven't had a chance to look back at that yet. So I don't know if they showed it from the proper angle. It may have been just onside now, having seen it. But I must admit, I was pretty much in line with that. And I was adamant it was offside well before it became more of a threat and eventually ended in a goal. So I was more annoyed about that. The foul, I think it's very similar to the thing with Morpay with the Norwich game. In the, as much as what you've already said, which is that I think last season those could get overturned or they could be given in the first place more readily. Mm. I don't think it's clear and obvious enough under the current remit from the referees, from what I understand, for them to overturn it. If I look at it, I think is that a foul on Sanchez? I think you can argue it is because Gabriel Jesus, isn't it, that's kind of jumping. Yeah.
I think it's catching his elbow on Jesus' shoulder or something like that, or on some part of him. And he definitely impedes him. But to me, that's a foul because it's always been a foul. But they do seem to have changed the rules.
Yeah, I agree. So. In my genuine hunch is to say that's a foul because he's moving backwards, albeit not by much, but he is moving back into the goalkeeper. And there's another player near him who he's fully well aware is there that could benefit from that movement. So and he is impeding him, as you said, not by an enormous amount, not some glaring issue, which is
why. But normally keepers are giving more leeway than other players, aren't they? And in all honesty, if we score that goal, I'm pretty confident Kevin Friend disallows it. He was that dreadful on Saturday. And I'm not going to sit here and blame him for the result. I don't think we lost because of Kevin Friend, but he was absolutely dreadful, culminating in a decision where inexplicably he gave us a throw-in when it was so clearly a corner that the whole ground would have seen.
Yeah, and this was at 3-1, I think, when we were still in the ascendancy. And we had a lot of attacks, a lot of corners and kind of general pressure play. And we are going to be a threat from corners, really, against a side like City. That's where
we haven't been, really, recently.
No, but in theory, it's where we have the chance to hurt them. We've got big men in there that could be a threat, probably against City more than other clubs, actually. And maybe that's part of the reason. And we were denied one opportunity there to put some more pressure on. How it was given as a throw, I have no idea. It was very clearly over the line by a
distance,
a margin of, I mean, we're talking a good couple of yards over the line before it reached the corner flag. It was in the air, but it wasn't ridiculously high that it's hard to judge. I think the lino did flag for that, didn't he? And then the ref overruled it, was it? Or did he not get it?
I didn't see what the line did to us. He was the wrong half, wasn't he? So he might not have been able to see it.
I mean, I've only just...
He may have waited for the referee, who thinking the referee would make the right decision. It must be one of those, though, with Kevin Friend. He must... I mean, obviously, a red card, you're going to get abuse anyway. But to get that much abuse as he got from the crowd for giving a throw-in rather than a corner, he probably must have realised pretty quickly that he got it wrong.
Exactly. And I have to say, in fact, on the subject of abuse of the referee, two things to mention. We had an interesting Sea Gulls Over London meeting in midweek on Zoom, a members meeting, where we had a guy called Stuart Carrington, who's, I think, studying as a PhD, but he's already written a book on refereeing psychology called Blowing the Whistle, I think, wasn't it? There's a subtitle to it as well, but Blowing the Whistle is the main name of it. And it's really interesting, actually, about how pressure is put on referees, how they are actually significantly better than lower down refs in terms of the amount of pressure they're having to cope with and all that sort of stuff, and how you get different decision making is affected by home games, away games, that kind of thing. How much time is added on can be affected by whether it's home or away and whether it's a vociferous crowd or not. There's lots of interesting elements to it. I guess the thing to say is recommend the book, because I think it's probably worth a read. But That was interesting, because I do think the whole thing about just registering a complaint before you actually genuinely mean one. In other words, you get in the ref's ear, you say, come on, ref, that was a foul, when you don't really believe it was, but you want it already on the record. So when you do want to call one genuinely, you've got more sway and all of those psychological tricks and elements that go on.
There are some players who are very, very good at that, aren't they? And managers, obviously, as well.
Yeah. It does give you a little bit more sympathy for refs. However, I did lose my voice predominantly because of the amount of abuse I was hurling at Kevin Friend on Saturday. I really lost
how he didn't put Edison in the build-up to the penalty. You know, A, he takes out Mepu, so you could argue in some players would have got booked for that anyway. But then he takes ages getting ready and sorting himself out and pissing around. So
he did get booked for time wasting later.
And then he time wasted loads more after the goal for like about a minute or so. And then only eventually when he's about to kick it, did he actually book him? And that wasted more time.
Yeah, exactly.
Which ironically, City then went and scored an injury time.
Kevin
Friend for the fourth goal.
Oh, 100%.
If he'd stopped the time wasting early, there wouldn't have been that injury time to add on.
Yeah, exactly, Peter.
Nothing to do with Moda's terrible pass or our lack of defending.
Yes, because of course that was it. We mentioned Duncan Cucurella had given the ball away and Moda gave the ball away for that final goal. Overcooked it. It's a ball back to sort of centre defensive position. Put too much on it. It was stretching for it. Couldn't get to it. And Foden, wasn't it? They got the ball off. And then laid it sideways to Mahrez, who was one of their subs, to score. Or did it go through De Bruyne? I can't remember now. No, it might have been
someone else originally, and then Foden. Oh, yes. Mahrez, that must have been it.
I'm trying to
forget about it, mainly.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Kevin Friend, I agree with you. A, he was atrocious, and B, it wouldn't have affected the result. But nonetheless, I think both from a footballer point of view and from a football fan point of view, I find this intensely frustrating. You're playing the world's best team or one of the two world's best teams that we're playing on successive weekends in this current season. And you're up against it. They're on top form. You've got virtually no chance of getting a result when they're on top form, when they're playing that well, particularly when you've got a couple of key players out like Bissouma and Webster and Lamptey obviously coming only off the bench. And Welbeck as well. So you've got we're a weakened team. Yeah, they might have a couple of players out, but that doesn't matter to them.
Other than De Bruyne, I thought actually they pretty much had their strongest team out.
Yeah.
I would regard as their strongest team.
I'd go along with that. And you're dealing with that, and then you're getting every decision, all of the general play decisions, you could call them, from the referee, and the smaller decisions given against you. Psychologically, that is very wearing. It's very tiring.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating.
Especially second half as well. We were trying to build momentum. And every time it went up to them, they went down and he gave a free kick. And it's like, clearly, it was like three or four occasions, it was clearly won the ball.
And that's just poor refereeing. And I know we can get on at refs and it is a hard job and everything else, but that was poor refereeing. Everybody on all sides of the pitch could see that was the case. He was giving terrible decisions. And yes, okay, sometimes you can get one or two things wrong. Your view may not be the best view. Any individual trying to criticise the ref would have that issue. But, you know, everybody from all sides are saying, no, that was a terrible decision. We already know he's terrible. He's not. I wouldn't say he's normally
terrible all round rather than terrible.
Exactly.
It's a good thing we've not got him involved in any of our games for ages, isn't it, really?
Yeah, such as, for example, VAR this very Saturday, for example, yes. Imagine if that was the case. Great.
That would be a disaster. We've got him. But at least he's there with a competent referee, you know.
Yeah, Mike Dean. Yes, wonderful. Perfect.
Dare I stick my neck out and say Mike Dean is actually one of the better Premier League referees in the games we've had. Obviously, you always remember him for that terrible decision at Middlesbrough. But actually, in the Premier League games we've had, he's not really done too much.
To be fair, he's not great, but he's not
as bad as some of them.
Yeah, he's certainly better. And we've got Chris Kavanagh, of course, as the fourth assistant, fourth official, which obviously is less of an impact on the game. But nonetheless, he's, of course, the Millwall referee from the FA Cup quarterfinal, which was another dreadful refereeing performance.
Yeah, I think I was saying on the Figure 11 London group earlier, that was probably one of the worst refereeing performances I've ever seen, including missing a massively blatant rugby tackle on Glenn Murray off the ball in the penalty area.
Oh, incredible. And what was the other game that he reffed, which was dreadful? It's gone out of my head now. I can't remember what it was. It was another one where... Manu game last season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if we're doing okay in
injury time, we'll just carry on playing until Liverpool get a goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to be honest, I don't think Liverpool need much help to beat us, frankly, but given the way they're playing. But
it is frustrating.
The referee might be half unbiased or whatever. Generally.
I mean, it's so exhausting to have that going against you as well. And what's more, on top of that, of course, particularly if the game is closer, the players are going to get all the more frustrated, and it could cost us personnel in future games due to sending
off. Looking for dissent, didn't he? When he one of the ones he clearly got the ball in, and he's not that sort of player as well. He's not the sort of player to show dissent particularly. You know, he's not someone, but yeah, you could see the frustration on his face when he won the ball clearly. And yet again, buddy friend whistles for a free kick.
Yeah. I mean, a quick word, we're talking about men of the match. And I'm not sure if I really want to give one for this game as far as Albion go, because I don't really know if there's anybody I would say stood out particularly. But I do think, as you said, that all the subs did well, McAllister, Mwepo and Tarek Lamptey. Lamptey in particular was sensational in phases, wasn't he? So much better than the Norwich game in terms of, you know, his fitness and sharpness coming in. I mean, there was one thing which just gone around on social media where he wriggled like a fish one way than the other, twisted and turned. Eventually, he cut back at an unfeasible angle and then got in between two players and then sort of sliced it sideways, got in between the two players without being fouled, got down to the byline and got a cross in. Absolutely sensational, wasn't it? And, you know, you could show that forevermore.
Surely you've got to mention who one of the players was as well. I mean, that feels like you're missing out part of the story there.
Go on, tell the listeners, Peter, because I'm coughing.
One of the favourites of the show, our friend Mr. Jack Grealish, was one of the ones destroyed. And Lamptey got in front of him a couple of occasions as well when the ball was passed to him by a City player. And Lamptey beat him for pace and got in front of him and beat him to the ball. Yeah. So much so he got dragged off in disgust.
Although he got an assist earlier in the game, I don't think he was that great, really, Grealish. I think he was he was very muted, and he didn't score against us, which made a change, I suppose, didn't it?
He normally does it, though. To be fair, last time he didn't, because he was in Veltman's pocket most of the game, wasn't he? He was like,
yeah, that's true.
Nil-nil draw. He basically enjoyed that. I think we had about 20-odd shots to about three that game, didn't we? And Martinez basically kept them in it.
Yeah. Really. We'll talk about the Liverpool game, and we're doing a preview of the Women's FA Cup semi-final this weekend. On a separate episode, we will preview the Leicester game, which is going on. It's tomorrow night, isn't it? Wednesday night, as we speak.
Whenever it is, whether we speak now or not.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. A few people we know are going to the game. Neither of us are going, I don't think, are we?
No.
But that's going to be interesting. We'll preview that during this episode. But before we do, I mean, in terms of Lamptey, obviously he's gaining match sharpness. He's improving. We've got a really important game against Liverpool at the weekend. Important, first of all, not to get thrashed if we can help it, which a certain other team did get at the weekend. To our benefit in terms of league table positions, Man United, 5-0 home defeat. I think their heaviest home defeat by that scoreline in terms of five goal margins. They've never lost 5-0 at home, I don't think. I think they lost 6-1 at home to somebody. Was it City? Or was that away? I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, they've never lost by that margin at home to Liverpool, their arch rivals. And they were in a total mess, which suited us because we're not going to catch Liverpool, but we might be able to stay ahead of Man U, at least for now. However,
we're not playing them until December.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't help that we're playing Liverpool away next, but Man U have got Spurs away, so that might be fiddly. I guess one of those teams is going to overtake us, aren't they, unless we get an amazing result on Saturday. But in terms of Lamptey, I mean, how do you see Graham Potter's going to play this in terms of the Leicester game and the Liverpool game? Because I'd love to see
it's a tough one, isn't it? Because part of me regards tomorrow as a bigger game than Liverpool in a way. I mean, I don't see any way we'll get results at the weekend. We want to just avoid getting thrashed. Whereas we're not going to often get a chance to get to a quarter final of a League Cup. The Caribou Cup.
League Cup.
The Caribou, Littlewood's Rumbelows, Carling, sponsored by Coca-Cola Cup.
corporately compromised cup. Yeah.
My thinking is also, I want him to start against Newcastle. That's the key. And so to me, he needs to do everything he can start against Newcastle. Now, I would say that's probably starting him tomorrow, giving him a half, see how he does, giving him an hour if he's doing okay, and give him a 45, take him up at half time if he doesn't. If he can make Liverpool for half an hour at the end like he did against City, great. Build up his fitness, that sort of thing. With the idea of starting against Newcastle, because based on the fact that I think we'll lose Liverpool, we'll then be five league games without a win, which makes Newcastle a big game, not in terms of relegation six-pointer or anything like that, which has been in the past at the moment, but in terms of building on and keeping our momentum that we've lost a bit over the last month. You know, because since Bissouma's been out, we haven't won, and I think we've lost, having had four wins in the first five, we just lost our way a little bit. And, you know, because while I didn't think we beat Liverpool or City, we would probably hope to have beaten one of Arsenal, Palace and Norwich at least. So Newcastle home will then suddenly become quite a big game, especially if we lose to Leicester as well. And I would really like Lamptey fit, because the last time Lamptey played against Newcastle, he absolutely destroyed them. And Yeah, I mean, their defence is pretty good, frankly.
Yeah, I think just purely for what he did in that one moment we've explained, would probably make man of the match from the City game for me. I think just because that just really got the crowd on, and you know, really gave us a lift when, you know, it's tough to take, but it's easy to expect to happen, the City scenario, being so heavily beaten, and it really helped to have him perk us up a bit. In terms of man of the match overall, I mean, I'd probably have to give it to Foden. I mean, or Bernardo Silva. I think those two were absolutely sensational. Mm-hmm. Some other very good performances. I think Gundogan's a player who almost gets underrated slightly by the fact that other players sort of shine above him. I thought he was superb. Some other great performances in their team. Pep Guardiola said that he believes that Foden can get better after you know, after this performance. And I think, good grief, really? Can we not play them again then, please? Can he sort of be missing that week?
It's all really, you know, I'm sure City fans love watching their team and, you know, kind of still some of them. But you do think, well, after a while, when you've just bought your way to this, and I know obviously Foden was brought through their youth system, the same if Newcastle carried on winning things. You know, the number of City supporters who turned up at Wembley when we played them in the semi-final of the FA Cup compared to us, you know, it was a big day out for us. But for them, it's like, oh, another day at Wembley, another day doing this, another day doing that. And it must just get a bit boring because, you know, at least, I mean, I'm not one to defend Man United, but at least they, in the 90s, they base their team mainly. I know they spend quite a bit of money as well, but their team is based on five or six youth team players they brought through and, you know, developed, and players like Keenan Schmeichel, who they actually bought quite cheap and developed as well. Yeah. Whereas, you know, they had the expensive players like Cole and that sort of thing. City's is basically barely an English player in sight, let alone a Manchester player. It's only Foden, really. And it's, to me, it's just, yeah, I mean, I actually would rather watch Albion doing what we do than what Man City or potentially Newcastle in the future throwing money at like £100 million players. And yeah, it's just, I mean, just kind of pointless. I mean, yeah, it's great for a while, and they, you know, their fans are gloating about the fact that they win things, and I'm sure I'd be accused of being jealous and that sort of thing in this situation, but I'm really not. If I was jealous, I was born in North London, I would have supported one of Arsenal or Tottenham if I really was back bothered about putting my team to win things, you know.
Who were dominating at the Arsenal? Were dominating.
Yeah, Arsenal certainly were one of the dominant teams at the time, and I'd have seen Arsenal win a lot of cups and tournaments if I'd wanted to.
But it'd be empty. If you don't feel it, you don't feel it. Yeah. It's been an empty experience. I wonder how many Man City fans feel that. I know there must be some
who feel like, yeah, hark back to the days when they, you know, were in the Championship and that sort of thing, or when mid-table each year, and a cup win would be a huge thing, or a day at Wembley would be a big day out, rather than just another big day, or how boring.
I think those ones are grounded. There are, I mean, there's a whole new breed of City fans, though, who have tagged along, either from whatever age they are, have tagged along, and certainly a younger generation who felt the need to kind of just pick a team at random. That's, you know, like, just, it's like FIFA, just pick whoever.
The equivalent to the Man U fans of the 90s and the Liverpool fans of the 80s.
That's definitely prevalent. We're both living in London. Certainly from my experience in London, I've noticed a lot more people, and people I've chatted to and dealt with through work. There's definitely I wouldn't call it plastic, but there's a new wave of City fans who don't have any historical connections to the club. I say they're not plastic in terms of they are going to games, one or two of the people I've chatted to, which is quite a lot of effort to go to. But it is plastic in the sense that,
there's no connection to an area and you choose to start supporting them when they get successful. That is still plastic, even if you go, to my mind.
To my mind as well, I think you've got to either have a historical connection, dad or granddad or whatever, or mum or somebody who supported them, or you're from that area originally, or both. Or you've moved to that area without having a prior affiliation, which is fair enough as well. If you didn't get into football heavily enough until you moved to a different area and then got into the local team there, then that's fair enough. There might be some other quirky reason that you could accept as well. But people that have just kind of born and brought up in London and thought, oh, City are a good team, appreciating football in general, and then just tagging on to City, whether you go to games or not.
I still regard that as a plastic supporter, because they've basically started to support a team when they're doing well. Yeah. I mean, I doubt they would have existed at City in the days when they were winning the League One playoff final in the last minute and that sort of thing.
The people I've chatted to, who are in that description I've just come up with there, you know, they're perfectly reasonable people to talk to in general, like nice people. But in terms of the football, I just find it an empty, hollow experience talking to them, because they've got no real... there's no real essence.
There's no history, you know. Because City actually have a really interesting history. They've done, you know, and actually a lot more interesting than some of the clubs, that the bigger clubs, like, you know, like Arsenal, who've never really you know, had any problem, you know, yeah. He obviously did go down, end up in what is now League One and that sort of thing, a bit up and down a bit over the years. That to me is a proper club. It's not about being Arsenal never relegated and, you know.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Anyone who's a genuine City fan, whatever you want to call that, fair enough and fair play. There's still the majority of them out there still, aren't they, in terms of match day attenders. But I do think, whether or not those are the people involved at the weekend, but there's a couple of things that irritated me from the weekend, actually, that helped wind me up, along with Kevin Bloody Friend, was and a couple of mistakes from us, was there's, the only time I heard City singing during the second half was for them to, the one time we weren't singing, as far as around up where I was anyway, was them singing "Your Support Is Effing Shit." And you think, well, okay, well, that's all we've heard all half, and then we completely outsung you for the rest of the half anyway. Irritates me that. Apart from being massively inaccurate, it's just kind of fits into that whole gloaty element. There was also an incident that happened after the game, which by all accounts, somebody we know has mentioned it on one of the websites, saying apparently there was an altercation, a verbal altercation, in the area where the stairs are, between the entrance to the north stand and one of the west stand upper entrances, and then you can go up to the other west stand entrances, that set of stairs there, somewhere around there, there was a verbal altercation between sets of fans, ending with, to quote what this guy said, a Brighton female fan being slapped around the back of the head. I mean, how violently that was or not, I don't know, but apparently it all kind of petered out pretty quickly, whether the stewards intervened or police or someone else, I don't know. But I mean, I can only imagine, if a verbal altercation has come up, it's probably something gloaty. It's probably, I mean, it's speculative, I don't know, but I can only imagine that's how it would happen. There's no particular history between the clubs in that regard. But, you know, if there is any gloating going on, it's unclassy, boys, because, you know, you give us Pep Guardiola, or even with Graham Potter, give us 3.5 billion or whatever the hell it is they've got to spend, and the even better training facilities than we've got, and the stadium that they've got, and we'll batter teams as well. Yeah, no problem at all.
Yeah, I don't regard what they've done as an achievement.
No, it's just graceless.
I have to say, I mean, as much as it pains me, United's wins in the 90s were an achievement, because they developed those players, that key parts of those players of the club, and brought them through the system. That was their whole midfield came from the youth team, quite a bit of defence. Yeah, so that to me is an achievement. To just go and spend more money than anyone else because you've been taken over by people who've got no connection to the area at all and no kind of affiliation with the area. And you've basically been gifted a stadium as well, in the same way that West Ham have, haven't you? I mean, they've not really achieved anything. We had to spend a lot of money on our stadium. Obviously, very luckily, we had Tony Bloom, who's would do it, who's a local, local person who supports the club. To me, that's achieving something, of a club. Yeah. And what we went through in the 90s, what City went through in the 90s and 2000, while nothing as bad as us, is an achievement as well, to fight back and to get back up Premier League again and again after going down. That's an achievement. To win the league when you've got more money than anyone else, it's not an achievement because, as you say, anyone can do it, really.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong.
They can be taken over.
There's a lot of good City fans out there that wouldn't be doing that. But for anyone that is gloating, it's classless and it's empty. That's all I'd say. Yeah. Enjoy your victories and celebrate this, that and the other. But don't try and rub it in anyone's faces like us, especially when we're doing so bloody well. Proportionally better, you could argue, on resource terms.
Yeah. Well, considering they had a player who cost more than our entire stadium, and he still got beaten by our £3.5 million right back and made you look an idiot.
Yes, well, moving swiftly on. I mean, what all I'll say on City finally is, I mean, they are a fantastic team, and it is a pleasure to be able to watch a team like that live. I have to say, I'm not going to Liverpool next week. I decided not to in the end. I need to kind of apportion games that I go to and ones that I don't. But in terms of that, and this weekend that we've just had, you know, sensational teams to be playing against. To think that our team, especially given the history we've had, is now playing the world's best players 2 weeks in a row. That's a million miles away from anything we've ever dreamed of a while.
It's now League Two, losing 3-0 at the likes of Torquay and Rochdale, and without wanting to play down anything to do with them and put them down. Obviously, Liverpool and Man City are light years away from them. So, we're getting stuffed by a better quality of team these days.
Exactly. And speaking of which, just having a look at the stats as well from the game, incidentally, for anyone interested. I mean, the fact that we got battered score-wise, We have 48% possession against Man City. Not many people get anywhere near halfway against those guys, I have to say.
In the first half, we had about that amount. I was stunned by that. It's like...
Yeah, I know. I guess it was because it was so counter-attack orientated, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I guess. And we did take the game to them a fair bit when we could. But I mean, 10 shots to their 23, 5 shots on target to their 14. So we did well to keep it down, actually, they had 14 shots on target. But, I mean, we had 5 on target, which is a pretty good tally against any team, let alone
Sanchez
City.
Sanchez made some really good saves. And there was a couple of their players' feet as well when he came out and kind of like gathered the ball at the players' feet. So I thought he had a decent game, barring one kick and potentially the first goal.
They had an extra booking than us, given that one was Lallana's frustration, as you said. You could argue that should have been a 3-1 rather than a 3-2 in bookings, because that shows that they had a few struggles to deal with, or time wasting that they felt the need to do. Also, we won on corners, either 7-6 or 8-6, depending on reality or Kevin Friend vision. Those stats look favourable, don't they? I mean,
the frustrating thing from my side is that we didn't actually really make anything of any of those corners. I'm not convinced Grosch has actually been that great this season, actually. I know we scored against, what was it, Watford? Duffy scored from a corner. But since then, I'm not sure we've really scored. I'm not sure we've scored since then, have we, from a set piece?
Not to my knowledge, no. I just don't see
Grosch is doing enough. My frustration, I think McAllister's a much better player now anyway, and if he carries on being on the bench, he might decide he wants to leave, and that's a big worry. And
McAllister's more our future, isn't he, in terms of the longer term, so we don't want to lose him at all. I love this player. I think he's great, and I'd like to see him involved more, because he's playing well enough to deserve it, and we could see he can knock a penalty away, even if the goal has gone the right way as well, which is a definitely a handy trait, and obviously that's, again, a direct comparison with Pascal Gross, another position that he also takes up. Another role he takes up. Obviously he come on for Grosch in this game, so there wasn't a choice. But in terms of, it's good to know there's someone else that can take penalties other than Morpay and Grosch. So that's another reason to have him in the team. But I think overall he's just got a bit more pace. I think we could do with that against Liverpool. I think he might start against Leicester, but we could do with him certainly against Liverpool. And I'm expecting involvement in both games. I would like him to start against the Reds, actually, in that match.
But I'm not sure. My issue is you can't drop Lallana, and Lallana and Grosch together in the middle are too slow between them. Grosch has to go. Lallana's been brilliant the last few games. I think even in games we haven't performed that great, I think he's, barring Palace, where he's a bit lost in the first half because he and Grosch were the only two central midfielders and they can't do that. But I thought he had a really... Actually, he was one of the other ones who had a decent game. Veltman as well. He got a couple of times in the first half. It was him at like 35. He was getting back and tackling in midfield when they broke away. I've felt so nervous about a team breaking away from the edge of their own area since that Liverpool 5-1 we had at the Amex. They were just... Even if they nicked it from a corner... They already had two or three players legging it out.
I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it's got to be just about
just pulled people back, whatever, at that stage and just taken the booking. I don't know, but
yeah, maybe. Yeah, tactical fouling as City themselves do,
which of course, exactly. Fernandinho, he's obviously only played a bit of a short time, but it's well known for that, isn't it? Like, regardless. Yeah. Speciality, but
it was something else. This team, wasn't it? I mean, that's got to be just about the best team performance we've had to come up against. One or two of the others.
It would have been nice to play them with tactics that weren't literally falling into their hands, though.
And I
think we probably would have lost with them with the form they're in. But if we played it tight and we played a bit, not like right on our own 6-yard box, but played it a bit deeper and not let them one on one against our rather slow, frankly, defence.
Yeah.
And I really think we miss Webster here, because there's a discussion on one of the WhatsApp groups about White and how much we're missing him. And I can definitely see how that's, I can see the point there. Especially, actually, ironically, he'd probably be playing central midfield at the moment, ironically, because Bissouma's out. But I also think we're missing Webster, who has got pace to him. And also, he's a bit quality on the ball is better than pretty much any of our centre halves as well we've got currently, maybe Veltman excluded. Yeah, so I think we do miss. We could potentially miss White as well. Obviously, £50 million player you're going to miss. But I think Webster is a massive loss, and hopefully it sounds like he's available for Leicester. So even if he misses Liverpool, he might be available for Newcastle at least, which is a bigger game, frankly, given more winnable one. Well,
tactical naivety. I mean, it could have been worse. We could have been doing what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was doing for Man United against Liverpool. And I'm sure we were going to speak to John Gibbons from the Anfield Wrap today. Unfortunately, his car's broken down en route home, so he wasn't able to get back in time to record his segment, which was going to be for another podcast later in the week. We are still hoping to have that segment on that podcast by recording it with him later in the week. But we'll see what we have him. Maybe not. But I'll be interested to get his take on the game. I'm sure he was at the match and being just up the road, wasn't it?
I imagine he's still quite pleased.
He might be, mightn't he? He might be slightly pleased that they've thrashed their arch rivals and ultimately humiliated them on a grand scale. Talking about teams taking their foot off the pedal, the City, I mean, Liverpool, where I think they went from third gear down to first gear, really, in the second half. If they wanted to, they could have crushed them like you would never believe.
Yeah, played in reverse at the weekend then.
Yeah, it's about preserving the team for the big one on Saturday, of course, the real big one, isn't it, Peter? Yeah, for those guys. But yeah, it'll be interesting to hear his thoughts on that. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's tactics were ultimately very naive. Somehow he decided to start pressing against the team you are least advised to do that against when it's never worked and it's not their game, and it wasn't the only thing they did wrong, but you know, they fell completely into Liverpool's hands. So we're not the only ones, and we've stayed above them by them doing the same as us.
In the context of the results, the other two teams against the top three teams had at the weekend,
yeah,
we had a pretty good result against the top three side, frankly, didn't we? We lost 4-1, the others lost 5-0 and 7-0, so
yeah. Yeah, Chelsea obviously being Norwich being that other, result.
Yeah, it was losing by 3 goals to City is hardly a disaster. What would have been a disaster was what it looked like could happen after 31 minutes, which was, six or seven or something like that at home, and a real kind of, a knock to morale. As it happens, I don't think we've come out of it too bad morale-wise. I think probably we'd have, obviously the first was a bit of a shock. But hopefully we'll learn from that and not sit on the halfway line with our defence at Anfield on Saturday, because if we do, Salah, Mane and Firmino or Jota, whoever plays, will tear us apart.
Yeah, Salah's on quite good form, isn't he, at the moment?
Yeah, he's doing okay, Apparently he wants £500,000 a week, and as crazy as it sounds, I think he's probably worth it, to be honest.
The way he's playing at the moment, yeah.
It's a 5-year deal, so it probably will be paying him £500,000 a week after he's worth it, but to keep him there for now probably is worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that a player is worth £500,000 a week is crazy, but...
Yeah, I mean, those three teams, Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea, who, as you said, were 7-0 against Norwich, they're on a different planet. Man United are deluded if they think they've got any chance
of
featuring whatsoever. Yeah, it's already after, 9 games, quarter of the way, or just under a quarter of the way through the season, mathematically speaking. And, there's a gap that's going to get bigger
as well.
Yeah, so, they have, exactly.
So it's not like they've got like games where one of them's going to drop points and the other people catch up. Yeah, I just think that gap's going to grow more and more.
Bigger and bigger, yeah. Because you look at the teams that traditionally would be in just behind them, and we'll do a summary of the rest of the weekend stuff in part two, but, the teams traditionally that will be pushing somewhere there or thereabouts, you'd have Tottenham, you'd have Leicester, Arsenal, maybe Everton, those sort of teams, all of those have underachieved already this season from where a team or a club like that should do. So already they've helped with that gap forming, and as you said, the top three have played each other, so they've got the ability now to just really stride away.
Yeah, their goal difference is like, I think Chelsea are 20, Liverpool 21, and City 16. And the next highest is six at West Ham.
Yeah, who went above us at the weekend after beating Spurs? Yeah. But
Chelsea for reference of zero, which considering we were zero at half time on Saturday was pretty good, really.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Chelsea, we've got this competition predicting teams and players to score for points, haven't we, Peter? And a couple of mates of ours went for Havertz as the scorer for the weekend. Chelsea managed to score 7 goals. He started the game up front and managed not to score, which I found imminently hilarious. but anyway, on that note, we're going to finish the first half. We'll do a summary of the rest of the weekend's football results, some other bits of news, talking about that banner at Selhurst Park, and a quick preview of Leicester, all of that coming up in part two. So here we are with part two then, Peter. Just one final point on Man City, actually. I forgot to mention earlier on. We were talking about how this has been a bit of a thing where we're getting closer to them. We got the result last season. We thought it might be another close one with us being near them in the table. This year didn't turn out to be. But discussions on one of the WhatsApp groups about whether, you know, if you've got some derbies, do we invent a derby name for this one as well? And we came up with the A23, M23, M25, M40, M42, M6, A556, M56, A5106, AM57 derby. Trips off the tongue, doesn't it? What do you think?
I think it's the ideal one, yeah.
Yeah, it's classic, yeah. So maybe that's what food for thought for no more than about half a second. Moving swiftly on, though, we talked about some of the games in the first part, Chelsea 7, Norwich 0, Man United 0, Liverpool 5, should have been more, and obviously our game as well. Just touching on a few of the other results, we did briefly mention that West Ham beat Spurs as well to go above us in the table. A couple of things didn't stand out. Leeds 1, Wolves 1, Southampton 2, Burnley 2. Results which all suit us, I think, because everyone dropping points is quite good. One that probably, and Palace Newcastle as well. We'll get onto that in more detail in a minute. But the other one that stood out was, again, another high scorer. Everton 2, Watford 5, which in itself is mad enough. But the fact that Everton took the lead in this game after just 3 minutes as well. Then Josh King, of all people, came back with a hat-trick with goals at various points during the match. I think they went into a... Sorry, they went back behind, didn't they, I think?
Yeah, they were 2-1 down with 15 minutes.
2-1 down, yeah. And then ended up with a 5-2.
And obviously King had a rather unsuccessful spell at Everton last year as well. So,
yes, that's right, yeah.
I don't think he scored 3 goals in that whole time.
No. I mean, he's up there with, you know, he's only scored 1 goal less than quite a few significant names now, Premier League familiar names.
Yeah, although at this stage of the season, an anomaly like a hat-trick will help that. I mean, it's...
Of course, yeah. But I mean, who would have called that, him scoring a hat-trick? And Watford winning by 3 clear goals, having lost the
league twice. Only had the 12 goals for and against in total in his first few games. So it's going to be boring, I reckon, watching
them. It's never dull with the Tinker Man, is it? Watford are funny fish, aren't they? It's hard to predict. I mean, we still think they're going to struggle come the end of the season. But, you know, results like that, if they can keep pulling that off.
Yeah, if they keep picking up the odd win, especially away from home and...
Goals is everything, isn't it, for survival in that sense. Yeah. That just cuts you above the rest.
If the general belief is that Newcastle probably will be okay, and I think probably they will be just about in the end, because if they spend well enough and get the right managerial appointment, and then if Watford were to pull away and Brentford carrying the way they are, there's someone, assuming Burnley, who obviously is, I mean, if they've been here quite a long time themselves, go down, and Norwich go down, there's someone else who's going to get pulled into it, and it's... You know, it's interesting to see who... I mean, obviously, on paper, it could conceivably still be us, because we haven't got 35, 40 points yet. Obviously, we've got less chance than other teams who are right down there at the moment. Southampton, Leeds, Palace, you know. So it could be any of those, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Other results, by the way, the weekend. Arsenal beat Villa 3-1. Comfortable. They were 3-0 up until late on, anyway. 3-1 in the end at the Emirates. There were no games on Monday, but on Sunday... we've mentioned Man U and West Ham fixtures there, the home games there. Brentford also at home to Leicester, which I think in the long run is probably not a good result for us. But in the short term, it is, because it stopped Brentford potentially going ahead of us if they won. It finished Brentford 1, Leicester 2. Once again, Brentford battled back there from one down and made a fight of it. Tielemans and Maddison doing the damage. Longer term, Leicester are obviously a team that are likely to... Well, there's a good chance they'll overtake us, which will be a shame. But we'll see how it goes over time. The other game we've got to talk about, though, is Crystal Palace Newcastle back on the Saturday. So the game ended 1-1. Benteke scoring again. I don't know what's going on. 56 minutes. Wilson, who's back from another injury a couple of games ago, equalising in the 65th minute. And that's how it stayed. A good result from our point of view, I guess, because
two teams dropping points. Got bored with 95th minute equalisers and found a new way not to win by having a late goal disallowed by VAR. That was good.
Plus, of course, they conceded a lead again in general, which is nice and satisfying.
It's funny how there's a lot of... I've seen bits of talk on, like, kind of quotes from Palace fans, that sort of thing, and that they're saying exactly the same things that we said about Potter initially, but that they were saying was wrong and points are all that matter. So it's like, well... Surely, if only points mattered then, they still matter now. I mean, simple fact
and
is
you're still struggling, boys.
Season, that's the fact, you know, whether or not they've been unlucky or they've done this and they've done that, they've won one game all season.
Yeah, and 9 points from nine games is, yes, it's usually a formula for just about success.
Yeah,
or survival.
And they've had some tough games, no question about that. But they also haven't beaten Newcastle at home. They haven't beaten us at home.
Brentford at home. Brentford at home, although that
Brentford
looks
at home,
a decent result overall.
For all the fact they've had some tough, especially away games, they've also, you know, and their basically only win was because Tottenham were appalling and also, and they weren't even ahead until Tottenham went up 10 men. So, you know.
And Watford have been seen as strugglers, and they just with that one result, they're now above Palace on 10 points.
Yeah.
And as you said, if you've got five teams below Palace, one of which is Norwich on 2 points from nine, they're going to go. There's no doubt about that. After that, unfortunately, from a Brighton point of view, if you want Palace to go down, you've got Newcastle on four, Burnley on four. So they're both a solid 5 points behind Palace. And in fact, probably an inferior goal difference that wouldn't be pulled back as well. But if one of those two was able to pick up, you've then got Leeds, who are only two behind Palace, and Saints are only one behind Palace. If one of those bottom three picks up, they could be in trouble still.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, this is where Newcastle actually have a bit of an issue, because if they... Who's going to want to manage them in this situation? The irony is, I was saying to someone the other day, I actually think they should have kept Bruce till Christmas if the fans had let them. You know, they're talking about like Paulo Fonseca, who's got no experience of English football, although maybe not now. There's debate about whether he'd be the option. Do you really want him coming in to take over a squad that's got no different players? He's never managed in England before. I would have said Steve Bruce would have been probably the best option till Christmas if they got behind him to grind results out, with then the understanding that he left in January when... Whether Bruce would take that, the fans obviously wouldn't be very happy. But, you know, in a way, he'd be a far better option for that than, you know, or someone like Allardyce, than you know, someone expensive foreign manager who comes in.
Yeah, you look at Graham Jones is taken over temporarily. I mean, I don't really know what his credentials are, to be perfectly honest. And, I mean, he's ground out a reasonably OK-ish draw, I suppose, on paper. Certainly for them at the moment, it's a reasonable draw. But that's not really getting them anywhere. They're still 5 points behind that team, who is one of the teams they'll be looking to drag in if they're going to come out. The other teams, as you said, Southampton, Leeds, Burnley all got draws. So they've gained nothing from that result.
Yeah, it feels quite late in the season. Nine games into the season with the bottom three have not won a game between them. That's
unusual. You're 5 points away from the point per game target.
Yeah.
5 points is not
easy. I think that's mythical these days, isn't it? I mean, point a game keeps you up quite comfortably these days, I think, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, looking at this, but if you've got teams on two from nine, four from nine, four from nine, that looks like it's going to be a very low total if it stays with those three teams. But yeah, who knows what it'll be. But I think you're going to be looking at, you've got to be getting over 35 points to have any kind of sensible feeling of potential.
For Norwich,
survival.
That's already a massive ask.
Yeah, I mean, for them, it's looking daunting, isn't it? They've already dropped points in games that they've drawn with Burnley. And they've lost to Watford. I can't remember if they've played any of the other teams down there, but you know, the games they have played haven't gone particularly well, have they? I'm just kind of embarrassed that we've got a point. That they got a point, sorry, from the game with us. But anyway, that's that. In terms of the going back to the weekend games, not really anything to speak of Brighton wise in particular, is there from the weekend's games, we mentioned Blackburn Reading. Blackburn won 2-0. One of our guys on loan, of course, Van Hecker. Tell us about that, Peter, because there was an interesting moment there.
Yeah, Van Heck played pretty much his first, I think, minutes for them, having been injured, I think. Did very well in fact. So he apparently played well generally, but he was involved in a really good, he broke from one end of the pitch to the other. It was a really good break. And then missed a really open, not an open goal, but a really good chance. Obviously would have fitted in quite well at Albion, based on that.
Yeah, it looks like he came on as a 39th minute substitute, which is interesting.
I think it's an injury.
And then Kadra was an unused substitute, which is a little bit disappointing, but there we go. There's not much more to say on that one. Go on.
I was going to say, we could move into the Isthmian Premier League, where there's some interesting results involving the top two.
I was just going to mention, actually, that Mick McCarthy's lost his job as well. Oh, yeah. Cardiff lost 2-0 at home to Borough. 8 games in a row they've lost. I think that includes the League Cup match we played against them, I'm guessing. 8 games in all competitions in a row. That's no one's going to survive that, really, are they? So the old the eagle is off, so to speak. But yes, the Isthmian League, Peter. And we've done some Sussex non-league specials with Worthing a couple of times and Southwick on one occasion. We hope to do Lewis at some point as well. And there's a bit of a Sussex derby between two of those teams, Worthing and Lewis, wasn't there, at the weekend? Worthing's good run after one bad result somewhere early on has continued, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And it was an interesting game as well. It ended 5-4, which doesn't really tell the whole story because Lewis were two up in 12 minutes and then Worthing were 5-2 up after 71 minutes. So it was looking at the scoring. So it was obviously an interesting game. But it wasn't the standout result in that division at the weekend because your local team, Enfield Town, went to East Thurrock, who Enfield are currently top and East Thurrock are not doing great. They're in the bottom three or four. And Enfield won 8-0, having been 7-0 up at half-time and 8-0 up after 55 minutes. So
well, that's misery, isn't it, if you're an East Thurrock fan?
There was also a 5-1 win for Folkestone and Victor against Kingstonian and a 4-0 win for Chesant. So obviously a lot of goals around in that division.
Yeah, I think Chesant actually is very local to me as well. It's only just a very, very short distance up the A10 from Enfield. That's very local kind of derby when those guys play.
They're
fairly new to the division. They're quite a good team, actually.
They're level with Folkestone, but they play 4 more games than them, as is the way in those sorts of levels at this stage of the season.
Folkestone have, I think, technically the division's in their hands at the moment because of their game in hand.
Yeah.
Enfield are the only team above
9 and have got 21 points. Kingstonian have played 12 and got 22. Worthing have played 11 with 25 points and Enfield have played 12 and got 26 points, so...
Yeah, and Lewis are considered another team, actually, speaking from the Sussex angle, who are looking good this season.
And Bognor are sixth as well, so Sussex are doing pretty well in that division.
Yeah, it is. It's good to see.
My former local team are down in 14th, sadly.
Wingate and Finchley, yeah.
And Horsham are 21st out of 22.
Yeah. But they're in the cup. They're on the cup run.
They are,
Well, for now,
long run.
That's a very long run.
They're going this next round.
I went on the Worthing forum and had a look, and they were saying how they think Lewis are going to be one of the contenders in there or thereabouts for this season's Isthmian League playoff and possible title challenge. The scorers, by the way, for Worthing, 2 from Pearce, 2 from Golding, and 1 from Pattenden, and for Lewis, 2 from Taylor, 1 from Weir, I think that's pronounced, and 1 from Tanner. So. Quite an eventful game, and apparently it's always eventful. And they said in the preview before the game on their match day thread, there's usually lots of goals and lots of incident. I think, blimmin' hell. Wish I'd gone to that game before the City game. I could have feasibly gone to it, but I wouldn't have been able to stay to the end or get to the Albion game on time. So it's a bit of a shame if it was an earlier kickoff.
Looking at the list now, there's been 48 goals in their 11 games this season.
Magnificent. Well, there we go. So, Peter, I think there's only one or two other bits to talk about. I mean, just wheeling it back to the game for the weekend at Selhurst. Obviously, we mentioned the match and the connotations, all that stuff. But there was a certain incident that occurred, wasn't there, which has caused a lot of controversy. Essentially, I think it's pretty much the first game since, well, thereabouts, isn't it, since the takeover was ratified by the Premier
maybe
League.
Probably the first away game for Newcastle.
First away game, yeah. That's right, yeah, because they had the home game, didn't they, where they got beaten by Spurs. So Palace, of course, being the team with ultras in the Holmesdale ends, the Holmesdale fanatics, decided to erect the latest of their banners, this one depicting a Saudi guy in traditional attire with PIF written on the front of his top, brandishing a bloodied sword. In the background, we've got the wording presumably depicting the Newcastle fans saying, we've got our club back. And then there's a Premier League. There's a Premier League image of Richard Masters standing by a bag of money with Arabic writing on it. And in between the two figures is a list that is written up as owner's test. And it's got a checklist: terrorism tick, beheadings tick, civil rights abuses tick, murder tick, censorship tick, and persecution tick. Pretty uncompromising message. My personal view on this is fair play to them. I think there's not many times I'm going to ever praise Palace, particularly the Holmesdale fanatics, because I think there's a lot of overblown children there sometimes making a fuss over nothing. But anyway, but on this particular issue, fair play to them. It did cause a fuss, though, didn't it, Peter? So firstly, what's your opinion on it? And sort of describe what's happened afterwards in terms of a complaint.
Someone reported it to Metropolitan Police, apparently, which a bit pathetic, really. I mean, it clearly isn't racist. It's a tyrannical regime who treat their citizens like appallingly and, you know, attack anyone who is, you know, attack women's rights, homophobic, pretty much have everything wrong with them that they can. You know, it's kind of like their behaviour is appalling. And anyone who sits there, and there's all these Newcastle, St. Clement's Newcastle fans saying, you know, kind of, oh, well, you're just jealous and that sort of thing. And it's genuinely not true, actually. I said earlier with City, I don't want my team to just buy success by throwing money at it and being the most expensive. I actually want, like, local players to come through, develop a youth system, that sort of thing, you know, rather than just throwing money at the most expensive players that come through. To me, I mean, yeah, it expressed a lot of views that I think a lot of people have. And just because you disagree with the Saudi regime doesn't mean you're jealous of Newcastle, which seems to be the genuine theme of their rather unpleasant fans.
That's their easy get out, isn't it? They say, oh, you're just jealous. And, you know, and Mike Ashley, we wanted to get rid of him. And I think, okay, fine. Of course you want to get rid of him, and well done for getting rid of him in that sense. But the fact of the matter is they're running around with Saudi headdresses on, or mock-ups of Saudi headdresses. Yeah. That's celebrating who the owners are as well as the takeover.
There must be some Newcastle fans out there who are really unsettled or have actually stopped supporting the club and gone somewhere else. And fair play to them, you know, by this whole thing. But the gloating and the kind of... And they haven't even done the thing yet. They're Boston training Premier League currently, and they're already gloating. So what the hell they'll be like if they actually win things under their rate?
I suspect it's going to become intolerable, isn't it? Unfortunately,
Newcastle fans are pretty intolerable anyway, considering they didn't win nothing for like 50 years. Yeah. So if they actually start winning things,
In terms of the banner, you're obviously fully in favour of the banner and applaud.
I think there should be a protest at every single club that places Newcastle this season, home and away. Yeah. There should be some sort of protest. All this bollocks the Premier League seems to have, well, not bought into, they've been kind of surely given some reason to be buy into, but all this bollocks about how Piff isn't a Saudi prince and that sort of thing is complete crap. I mean, clearly he owns 80% of Piff. How on earth can that not be him? It's it's ridiculous.
It's delusional of anybody who's either trying to convince others of any alternative or themselves if they're trying to convince people that they're not involved. Mohammed bin Salman is clearly involved in it. There's no doubt about it. And that just rests the story. Yeah. In terms of the protests, yes, I think they will carry on. I'm thinking of getting an Amnesty International flag, so I think that'll be my little bit. There is talk of Brighton fans trying to get hold of or have handed over to them from Palace the same banner to bring to the Albion. While I would 100% be in favour of that, I suspect that the club won't be. And I suspect even if they weren't particularly adamant against it, it's going to be difficult to bring in a big banner because we're pretty strict on these fire regulations and what you can bring in. You can't bring something in of that size without it being very, very obvious.
The bags allowed in the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So they would have to get special permission to do it. I personally don't think the club will, because they'll be looking to avoid treading on toes, really, at this stage. I think they can make a general statement, but I don't think they'd want something quite so in your face, shall we say, which I was applauding. But I think
the only possible exception would be if the owners and the chief executive tried to bring in a water bottle with a lid on, and then they'd be all over it. or a backpack slightly too big that was not supposed to be allowed in, and then Paul Barber would be really in favour of chucking them out.
Absolutely can't be doing with that.
The sort of important things you want to kick out of one fans with a backpack slightly bigger than you're allowed.
You mentioned that there was some sort of talk of racism on this in relation to this banner, and that seems to have been there seems to have been some sort of suggestion that was part of the complaint made. I'm wondering who this is. I mean,
Met have cleared it and said it's nothing like
that. Yeah, so investigated.
It was clearly an attack on the Saudi regime. It was not an attack on in any sort of racist sense or like that to me. It was clearly a judgment of a regime who murders its own citizens, murders journalists outside the Turkish embassy, you know, kind of happily kills people who you know, kind of argue with their tyrannical rule. That's it. You know, yes. It's nothing to do with racism or anything like that at all.
Yeah, it's just a complete complaint against murderous despots getting involved with sports washing their way into the English game. And
then their defence seems to be that we had Saudi adverts for the Saudi Grand Prix on our advertising hoardings on Saturday. It's like they're Premier League adverts. We have no choice but to put them up there. Now, yes, obviously I don't like the Premier League have adverts from certain places that, you know, probably shouldn't be, but and art does it, and it obviously helped aiding sports washing by doing that as well. But we don't have a choice as a Premier League club for doing it. Every Premier League club has those adverts. It's like, that's a big difference between putting that on an advertising hoarding around the ground as compared to, you know, being owned by the regime, basically.
And I think somebody's made a point about ethical companies, Starbucks, Uber. There was a discussion on one of the podcasts somewhere saying, you know, there's a reason you could have an objection with so many owners and companies and this, that and the other. But I do think, and I agree with what was said by that person, that there's a distinction between that and a football club, because I think a football club has a lot more to it than just being a company. We go back to this thing about customers. They're not customers, they're fans. From a business point of view, they're customers, but in essence, the whole point that football club exists and continues to thrive is because of the fans. Yeah. Fans, not customers. And there is a difference. There is a distinction between football clubs and other companies. You can choose to go with that company or not, but you can't choose your football team. If you've got an affiliation with Newcastle and you've got an issue with the Saudi government, what are you supposed to do? You can't just change clubs.
Well, exactly.
You can refuse to go, but you can't just change clubs and go, okay, that's fine, I'll be a...
You can't imagine the Newcastle fans going and protesting outside, Southampton House, like we did with Archer and Stanley and that sort of thing. I don't think they'd be given very short shrift. Yeah, I think my other thing, and I think that's what it reflected in the Palace banner, was this whole idea of, like, we've got our club back. No, you haven't. It's far further away than it was before. Before, you were jointly protesting against an owner who didn't like... To be fair, not hugely. Newcastle haven't protested loads, I don't think, compared to a lot of clubs. You know, they've been pretty lazy, frankly, in some of the protests. They've not, you know, they've attended games, booed a bit, but they've not really done an awful lot to push actually out, like some clubs have with their owners.
Yeah, what have they got? I mean, they've got, admittedly, an owner they didn't like. You know, he was there for 14 years. He didn't progress the club on, and they are a big club looking to get towards trophies. Yeah, I get that. But, you know, he's done nothing overwhelmingly objectionable to do with the club itself, apart from making decisions that they didn't like. But he's run the club.
They haven't won anything, major trophy, since the 1960s.
People
say about their fans and that sort of thing. And
the fans,
I remember a time when I started watching, they were getting like 6,000 fans in the second division. You know, it's like there's a lot of fans who've, you know, relatively jolly come lately, who seem to think that they're some sort of God-given right to win trophies.
And they've got,
since the 60s.
Whether they like him or not, they've got a Geordie that was managing them. And during that time, 10,000 fans stayed away, supposedly as a protest against Ashley, because of his way of running the club. But ultimately, they were treading water. Yes, that's not what they want, but they're treading water. Clubs have had a lot worse to deal with than this. And, you know, what? As a moral individual, who is he? Well, he's not a Geordie. He's a businessman with, shall we say, questionable morals as far as contracts for employees, the way of dealing with things, the way he slaps advertising for his company on the club, all over the club. He's obviously got an alternative agenda involved. Well, that's not really much good, is it, compared with the Saudis in charge now? Yes, I mean, I'm sure.
Matt looks like an angel compared to them, doesn't he?
Yeah, and maybe there's some other bits I've missed out, but I'm sure there's bits to do with Saudi we've missed out as well, if we're going to get into that. Yeah, I mean, I'm in favour of the banner. The complaint that there was the illusion of racism, I don't know if it's to do with the fact that there was a caricatured image of a Saudi guy, but there was also a caricatured image of Richard Masters. So it's also racist against white people if it's racist against Saudis. Other than that, it was just stating facts as ratified by UN. I don't know what else.
Yeah, that was one of the things someone commented. It's like, are they going to investigate the UN as well?
The other thing they
didn't specifically mention is going against international law and executing under kids who are under 18 when they were they committed their alleged crimes. That's another lovely one that the Saudi Empire does.
Charming. Yeah.
They're a lovely bunch.
Final bit on Newcastle. I mean, I was listening to a pod and there's a guy, I didn't catch his surname, it's Chris somebody, who's a journalist. I think he's a Newcastle fan, but he writes on the North East. And he was suggesting that Newcastle, it's going to be a slow build and all that stuff, but he thinks that they are going to survive this year. Okay, he might be right, he might not be, but he seemed quite confident of that. But he also made the assertion that there were six clubs in this division. He didn't say who, but he said six clubs who have weaker squads than Newcastle, which I find interesting because look at the table. Chelsea,
yeah,
so Liverpool,
I just
loaded
the table for the same reason, yeah.
Yeah, Man City, West Ham, Brighton, Spurs, Man United for all their sins, Everton, Leicester, Arsenal. Like, that's the top 10. I think there's no doubt whatsoever all of those clubs, ours included, and I say this not just because I'm an Albion fan, have a better squad than Newcastle.
But I really don't think... What strengths did Newcastle have, barring Wilson and Saint-Maximin?
Yeah. You look at Wolves, you've got Adama Traore, you've got Raul Jimenez, you've got a solid back line, you've got England international Connor Cody, of course, as well, who is better than Lascelles, isn't he, to be fair?
Ruben Neves, yeah. Who's one of the best midfielders in the Premier League.
Great players. Brentford, 12th place. I'd definitely take their squad. I know it's to do with the dynamic with the manager as well, but I actually prefer their squad. I think Tony's as good as Wilson is, in my opinion. They've got a really solid back line, some good midfielders, some good creative talent. I think they've just broader over the squad. I think they're probably a better squad, to be honest, than Newcastle. They would probably, that's one of the ones they'd probably contend, but I disagree with that. Aston Villa definitely got a better squad than them.
Yeah.
Then we come into the bottom seven. So we've Newcastle obviously being one of them. So if you do go with Brentford as a better squad, we've got to be talking about one of these other six. So Watford, Palace, Southampton, Leeds, Burnley and Norwich. Well, okay, Norwich's squad admittedly is not as good as Newcastle's. That's a given. Burnley, in terms of quality of individual players, might be arguable. In terms of team ethics, I think they're better, but maybe in terms of squad, not.
Because Burnley got a much better defence, for example, on paper.
Yeah. So, I mean, they'd take Tarkowski, wouldn't they?
That's far better defence.
Goalie as well. The goalies, in fact, in plural, are better. And they've got solid strikers.
So, I mean, I would say they're pretty even, and they're pretty even in the league table. I mean, they're one goal apart. So, yeah. I mean,
Then you've got Leeds. They've got a reasonably good goalie. You've got Calvin Phillips, who's an excellent player. Yeah. And they miss him when he's out.
Leeds are far better.
You've got Rafinha.
Yeah.
You've got
Leeds
Bamford's
are far better on paper. Not even close.
Bamford's as good as Wilson, isn't he, nowadays? Yeah. So what do you say? You know, I don't think
they've got Cox and Llorente at the back as well, who are better than anything Newcastle's got when they're fit. Yeah,
as much as it pains me to say, I think Palace have got a better squad. They've invested in some good young players there. Alisi looks good. Edouard will wait and see. But they've got even like Benteke.
Eze, when he comes
probably
back,
get Newcastle's team, wouldn't he? Essay is a good player.
Newcastle have got the Palace, haven't they? It's that goal scorer in Wilson. That's the only thing they've got.
Yeah, that's true. And Watford, Watford's squad I don't think is great, actually. I mean, they're one that probably could be argued below. But I mean, for Newcastle to assume, a journalist to assume that they're better than six of those clubs, I would definitely contest on two or three of those at least. And that's what they've got now. And that's assuming Wilson stays fit. And of course, he's got a reputation
as does Saint-Maximin as well, which is their problem.
I
think they are in the bottom three or four. They were dreadful twice when we saw them last season. I mean, they were probably the worst two teams we played last season in the sense of across the two games. You know, the first one, we were all over them from the first minute. The second one, they held on till half time almost, at least. But I mean, both games, they fell apart. And I mean, the fact they finished above us last year was a travesty, frankly. And actually, quite a few points above us as well. They just fluke quite a few 1-0s that they're not doing this season. But yeah, the problem for them is that they don't get a manager's appointment, right? They could be out of sight by the time January comes. And then they're only going to attract the wrong sort of player, really, the mercenary, who probably won't be up for a relegation battle. You know, so it's a difficult one, isn't it? I've heard reports, and I don't think it's going to be true. I can't see it being true because someone will break ranks. But there are rumours that the Premier League clubs are agreeing that they're not going to sell to Newcastle, which would be hilarious. Because then they just be bringing a load of expensive foreign imports into a relegation battle, and probably the worst sort as well, because they'll be the mercenaries, because they won't, you know, no really quality player who wants to win things will go somewhere. They've got to wait probably 3 or 4 years and could yet go down this season to do it. So they'll end up with either really big gambles or, you know, and I mean, obviously, they've already got a £40 million gamble up front they can play.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, 190 million true. That's rumoured around they can spend gets you almost five Joe Lintons. Mm. That's
okay, well, moving on to our final subject then, Pete. Oh, God, really? Joel Linton. He's of course, yeah, 40 million, so that's a good
member. That's what I'm saying, if 190 million buys you almost five of him.
Right, moving swiftly on to our final subject, I think it is anyway, the EFL Cup, the Football League, League Cup. Three games are taking place tonight as we speak, Tuesday, which is Arsenal v Leeds, Chelsea v Southampton, and a rare all-non-Premier League game, QPR against Sunderland, which is interesting. Those games are taking place tonight as we record. The other five, looking for a place in the quarterfinal, are tomorrow, which is Wednesday, Burnley versus Spurs. Preston, another of the teams outside the Premier League, at home to Liverpool in probably the most attractive fixture because it's a bit more of a giant kill scenario there. Stoke against Brentford, I suppose you could say the same now. And West Ham, Man City. So a lot of Premier League interested in there. Apart from, of course, the other game, which is our boys, Albion, playing away at Leicester. All these games kick off at 7:45 tomorrow. I mean, as you said, in a sense, it's a bigger game because we've got the chance to get to a very rare quarterfinal in the League Cup, which is, you know, I can't remember that happening actually before. I don't know if it's.
No, we were saying it might not have ever happened actually.
I'm not sure if it has.
Once did, but my dad was.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
We never have done so.
Yeah, so a long time ago, if it's ever happened. So in a sense, it feels like, you know, you really want to go further in this tournament just for a change. I wouldn't say it looks easy because so many Premier League clubs have survived actually much more than normal. I would say. By this stage, having said that,
if you don't want to write anyone off, you'd want to go through and get a home tie against QPR or Sunderland, probably, wouldn't you? That's what everyone would be aiming for in the
Preston.
Well, Preston
could be Liverpool.
Preston have got bigger clubs though, so they could well be out.
Yeah, that's true.
One of QPR or Sunderland would be, and I'm not saying
that would be
QPR or Sunderland home would be a guaranteed win, but on paper that would be the fixture you either Brighton or Leicester would want to get if they got through.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, for our part, we've got Leicester away. It's on the Wednesday night. In terms of the game, we've already talked about what we think might happen in terms of squad. In terms of what we haven't mentioned on that regard, it's going to be about which players filter in from the academy, I guess. Taylor Richards is one obvious name that might crop up. Obviously, you've got from the back line, Hayden Roberts and Sungi, if he's available, might be. You might possibly have Ed Turns, who appeared in previous rounds. I guess we'll rotate goalies as well. Sarmiento, yeah, who's looking a great prospect from what I've seen of him in 23s once or twice on the YouTube channel. He's looking pretty good.
Yeah, 20 minutes still, to get 20, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So I would like to see some of those players get a run. I do think maybe McAllister gets involvement here, possibly Lamptey for a half game, as you said, something like that.
And just one or two. According to Potter.
Who's that, sorry?
Webster sounds like he's going to start with Potter.
Oh, that's good, because, of course, he's one of the other key names to bring back into
I think the big difference tomorrow is, and I mean, the good news for anyone listening is that apparently Vardy's out. The bad news is that Patson Daka is on crazy form in the
fire, isn't he? He got all four goals in the Europa League game the other day.
Yeah, and he got a couple in the League Cup, I think, last round, or was it maybe it's another Europa League game? But he looks on fire, and I mean, that's, I think, going to be the difference tomorrow. We're going to be playing Connolly and maybe Lacardia from the start. Well, they'll be playing Daka and maybe Iheanacho for a bit as well. You know, that's the difference what you get when you've been in Europe a bit and you've invested more money and you've got that sort of area. You know, it'll be interesting to see, though, hopefully, obviously I'm not going, but to hear about how Mwepu does as well after hopefully he got a bit of confidence from his performance at the weekend. So,
Of course, a compatriot of Daka's.
I've
got somebody, Zambian, I know, said Daka is a very classic name, and Mwepu said is distinctly Zambian, but probably more regional, whatever that means. But nonetheless, the important point is we've got our man. It would have been nice to have got Daka as well, wouldn't it? Seeing as how he's doing now. But I guess if Leicester were in for him. It was a summer purchase. We wouldn't have probably beaten them to his signing.
But Weppo, obviously he'd have got a quicker route into the team with us because obviously he's had to wait behind Vardy and Iheanacho. But it looks like he's already paying off for him because he scored some pretty good goals in Europe. And that is the advantage, of course, of the Europa League's often not dismissed, but kind of seen as a bit of a pain by a lot of teams in terms of like the number of games there. But actually for someone like him, trying to adapt to the new team, playing in European games where he's probably more used to the style actually will help him get into a team. So I hope he has a quiet night tomorrow, but he looks pretty dangerous.
Yeah. So it will be good to see. And then we'll see what happens. But I'm not predicting a win. I do think that Leicester will probably have too much for us. I'm going to go for a solid, boring defeat kind of score from a Brighton point of view. A 2-0, fairly comfortable 2-0 win for them.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, I almost got the Man City one right. I said 3-1, I think, to City.
Yeah, we both did.
And I think possibly the same on the Liverpool game. But this one, yeah, Leicester game, I think it'll be 2-0, unfortunately. But I hope I'm wrong. You never know as well. And I'd certainly be delighted if we do get through.
Leicester have not been on great form this season.
No, they're still below us, even though they won at Brentford at the weekend. You know,
but I think in a first team versus first team game, after we had obviously earlier in the season, I think we have more chance. But I think with the injuries we've got, it's not even a second team. It's probably be a second and a bit team as well, whereas they'll be there. And I think they've had a few injuries as well, so their defence might be quite new. But yeah, when they've got a player like Daka they can bring in, and one or two of the attacking players they can bring in, they've got quality on the ball up there. And we've got, frankly, Connolly and Lacardi don't really compare, without wanting to be unkind.
Yes. Not quite, I'm afraid. And so barring a surprise, I think that's the way that's going to go. We'll see. We could be pleasantly surprised. In the meantime, I think that pretty much summed it up. The only other couple of bits to mention was a couple of the players. I know Stoke have got Ostergaard and Simmer on loan, by the way. I don't know if either of those will be involved
Simmer's
against Brentford. But Simmer's been injured, hasn't he? Yeah, which I didn't realise
until
recently.
Like next week or so, I think he's due back.
Yeah, a bit frustrating. I want to see how he does, because I think they were impressed with him early doors, and then he got the injury pretty soon after. Ostergaard, I don't know what the situation is there, because he hasn't been starting
for the
games, has he?
He did so well at Coventry, had a good start at Stoke, and then for some reason he's dropped out a bit.
Yeah, so I don't know if he'll feature against Brentford tomorrow night, but it would be nice to get them more game time. That is the point, isn't it, really, of it.
Zakaria has got a goal at the weekend again for Augsburg, I think.
Oh, yes, yeah. Any more sensational bits of action from Mitoma?
They went top and he won a penalty, apparently. So they went further, clear at the top, whatever, winning 3-2 away from home. So
not bad.
There are rumours, a suggestion that it's been said that we might be looking at whether he can qualify for a permit in January, which
that would be great, because I think in a sense that could possibly solve a problem. I do think we need a striker, but if we haven't got a striker, a wider attacker, which is what he basically is, or a winger if you want to call it that, might solve the problems in a sense, because it would allow greater flexibility amongst the forward options.
It was interesting, someone's comment was made at the weekend that Mopé obviously was taken off, which I think was just it's 3-0, do not get an injury or a sending off when you're 3-0 down, when you're our main striker. But it wasn't Connolly brought on, it was a front three of Trossard, McAllister probably, and March. So, or front two of those and March kind of close by. So it was interesting that happened, that he was obviously happy to move players around and rather than go that option rather than and I think completely take off Mopé. I mean, why risk your one fit quality striker, but it was interesting he didn't bring Connolly on. That was the, and he didn't against Norwich either, where I thought actually it might have been his ideal game against the team who aren't that big, aren't that strong, but don't have that much pace at the back as well, and were pushing forward for the win. You'd have thought Connolly might have been the ideal player, but
yeah,
Jesse's maybe a bit down the picking order at the moment.
Yeah, it speaks volumes, doesn't it, that Connolly didn't come on for that, because you'd be looking for him to get game time at the very least, wouldn't you, if he was being considered. Yeah, there we go. Okay, that pretty much wraps it up. Billy the Bee, by the way, the Brentford fan, I've just seen a tweet from him saying, truly honoured to have been named on the @footy blacklist 2021, which I'm assuming doesn't mean that he's going to be banned from loads of stuff. I'm assuming it's something else. Alongside a list of truly inspirational people, he says, really chuffed, a lovely surprise. So I'm presuming this is sort of black figures within the community, the football world or whatever else, who've made a good contribution. That's what I'm guessing that's going to be to do with. But fair play to him. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, good. I think that pretty much wraps it up, doesn't it, Peter? So we're going to do a preview later in the week for it'll be a review of Leicester, but also a preview of the Liverpool game. And we are going to speak to someone from the club about the women's game. We've got, of course, this big semi-final for the FA Cup. The second time ever, I think, that Brighton's women's team, under whatever guise it, have been in the semi-final of this competition before. I think the only other time is 1976, I think it was. But we'll be talking to the general manager from Brighton about that with a chat on Friday. That episode will be out late in the week. The game itself is on, I think, at 4:45 at the Emirates, it's an away game, effectively, even though it's a semi-final, away to Arsenal on Sunday, which we should all look forward to. And if anyone can get along to that, recommend they do. I would like to. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to, though, but I'm going to play that one by ear. But good luck to the ladies' team. We'll have a separate episode on that, though. But in the meantime, good luck to the men's team in their game against Leicester. Come on, Seagulls. We can do it. We can do it. Peter, that's it for this one then. So, stand or fall?
Up the Albion. Sports Social Podcast
Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.